From the Land de Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 15th day of November, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Take a quick look at the agricultural news from the afternoon. Hear all about domestic crush, the NOPA numbers, and soybean exports with Ben Brown, ag economist from the University of Missouri and Extension there, along with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, and then take up the cash grain market with Greg Johnson of TGM from right here in Champaign County. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today finished at 576.5. That was 0.75 cents lower. The March at 584, down 1. May a quarter lower at 588.5. January beans at 1257 at a quarter, up 13 cents. The November of next year, 9 higher at 1249 and a quarter. Bean meal up $9.60 at 371.70. Bean oil 77 cents lower at 58.20 for the day. Soft red winter wheat, $8.26 and a quarter a bushel, up 9 and a quarter, and the hard red 3 higher at $8.36. Live cattle futures at $136.32 and a half, 22.5 higher. Feeders 75 higher at $158.47 and a half, and lean hogs 62.5 cents higher at $81.17 and a half. Crude oil $80.82 a barrel. That's 3 cents higher for the afternoon. And diesel fuel or heating oil just about a tenth of a cent lower at $2.40 and 2 tenths of a cent on the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at about 36,004 points is down just around 9. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to discuss what happened in Chicago for the day. Hi, Kurt. Thank you for being with us. I really want to dive into the overnight and into the day trade, because when I looked in the overnight, corn was up, but gosh, it didn't manage to make it through the day trade that way. Why was that the case?
Well, if you don't like it, just wait a little while. It's a lot of zigging and zagging. And two, in the night trade, when we start, we're going off Asia thoughts and strategies. As you maybe wake up for 2:30 at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, for some unknown reason, we've got Europe taking place then, and so they kind of influence the market a little bit. But after that, it's computer-generated. A lot of that activity is electronic, and at that point in time, we don't see a whole lot of human emotion enter until about 5 o'clock, 5:30, when the U.S. guys start to wake up and say, boy, I need to onboard or off board. But the overnight, back and forth, as we entered the day session here, I think what we saw is the soybean market continue to extend its gains. There's a lot of spread activity, buying meal, selling oil. The bean oil market kind of cooled down, the world vegetable oil market cooled down. But this talk about China not exporting lysine, and the end user here, the feeder here in the U.S., trying to get some coverage on meal was the main theme. And that's been the main theme here for the last about a month or so. The crush report, it came in NOPA crush report came in 2 million bushels above trade expectations. Everybody was negative crush, but we didn't have the beans to crush. And finally, as harvest got moving along through here, we've got beans to crush. And it's not a record crush, but it's like the second or third largest bean crush for October. And so there's some big demand, on the meal side in through here. It kind of led the charge. It prompted the beans to move up to the, the old highs here that we kind of stalled out here back in the middle part of October. So we are up against some resistance here, seeing if we'll move through it or not. So I got to change my theme here from bullish Mondays to optimistic Mondays, because we could maybe have a turnaround Tuesday here for Wayne.
Yeah, well, we'll see. And that would need to be in the corn in particular. You think he'll find higher corn prices into the overnight and day trade tomorrow?
I think corn's kind of consolidating here. I think the jury's kind of out here on whether to push on up through these highs. It seems like the commodity funds want to spread it for the most part. Today they were buyers of the beans and meal. They sold oil outright, but they kind of kept the lid on the corn and the wheat for the most part. We'll see if beans kind of give up. I think that'll bring buyers back into the corn. See how this afternoon's harvest progress report goes. We're down to that last 10%. The trade fields were 91% harvested on corn and 92% harvested on beans. We're always down to that last, 5% or so. But the significance of this is there's a lot of beans out there, a lot of beans that's, got to come out here, the central part. Conditions are just terrible, just poor. We're seeing situations where the quality of these beans still left out in the field are deteriorating quite rapidly. Then plus two, this corn that's down. I mean, there's guys only hacking through about 15 acres a day, and that's not good either. So this last part of the harvest in here is going to be a real struggle for those guys here as they try to clean that up. The thing is, that crop, is not on the market. There's not going to be a whole lot of new crops selling in through here for the most part. As we do wrap up harvest in through here, guys are just going to hang on to stuff until we get into the end of the year here. So if anybody needs some cash grain needs, for the most part, they're going to have to keep the bases firm to try to shake it loose, particularly this last 5% of the crop still out in the field.
How long do you suppose that the market will continue to focus on what's happening in the United States as opposed to paying attention to at least the soybean crop in South America?
Well, that's a great point. A lot of the trade believes we've pretty well got U.S. production kind of dialed in. They'll jockey the U.S. production demand around clear end of September. Then after that, they'll revise that, down the road. But no, we're in the key growing season for the southern hemisphere. The weather forecast is, starting to cooperate compared to where it was 30 to 45 days ago. And there's ideas that crop's going to be large at this point in time. The other thing, too, is we've got not only the southern hemisphere, but China. I don't know if we're getting accurate news out of China or not, but we're seeing a situation where their harvest is struggling to come out. They've been just sopping wet in some areas. Plus, too, they're hit with these higher energy costs and transportation costs and electrical grids going down. So they're really struggling to get their crop out. So we're watching two different areas other than the U.S., the Southern Hemisphere plus China.
One last thing. Last week, the administrator of the United States EPA was quoted as saying that neither agriculture or big oil would be happy with the RVOs for the RFS. I'm wondering whether those might be out this week and whether that concerns you or not.
Well, it is a concern when you step back and look at the big picture here. We were looking at some policy here to go green. You just can't go green just in a heartbeat. That takes time. But, ethanol demand's alive. It's strong. Export for ethanol is strong. We got to keep that base going in through here. And this bio, it's coming. It's going to be there because you saw a major commercial firm come in here and move from ethanol the bio, the bean oil side of it. Then with commercial doing that, they've got good reason or see some good potential down the road, Todd.
Hey, thank you.
Very good.
That's Kurt Kimmel with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, just a couple of stories for the day. The Senate Agriculture Committee approved the nomination of Robert Bonney as the USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation some 3 months ago. The position is one of the most important at USDA, as the undersecretary oversees the agency's farm subsidy and land stewardship programs, which cost some $10 billion a year. The departmental scope covers public nutrition, international trade, ag-research, meat safety, and rural economic development. Successful Farming says several senators placed hold actions on Bonney for reasons mostly unrelated to the nominee. Bonney was trained in forestry and served as an undersecretary in the Obama administration. He joined USDA as a climate advisor on the same day Joe Biden took office. Bonney has been at the forefront of the administration's plans to mitigate climate change. During his confirmation hearing this year, he said that actions on global warming would be voluntary, incentive-based, and locally led. He did the same last week at the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Conference when he was asked about potential climate change mandates related to private property.
I don't think so. I don't think it'd be a useful approach at all. I think it'd be counterproductive. And I'll tell you why. So there's so much diversity in agriculture, there's so much diversity in ranching and in forestry. It's hard to develop mandates that are appropriate across all those lands. And I don't think politically they'd work very well. And I don't think they'd work very well practically. Even now, where you see the best work happening, it's about incentive-based voluntary conservation. And I think ultimately that's how this has to work. And in fact, I think it's the best approach. I think those types of partnerships that we talk about aren't possible with an approach that is linked to mandates.
That's Robert Bonney. He's up for a vote potentially later this week to become USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation. The other item in the ag news for the day has to do with the supply chain. The nationwide supply chain backlog at U.S. ports involving hundreds of ships and thousands of containers could mean federal help sooner for American producers and consumers. The White House, faced with supply chain congestion fueling the highest inflation in 30-some years, will speed up delivery, it says, of port and marine infrastructure grants within the next month and a half. The effort could help repair supply chains that are key for ag inputs and exports, says U.S. Senator from Minnesota and chair of the Senate Ag Committee, Debbie Stabenow.
We know when you've got a global pandemic that shuts the economy down, that we're going to have a lot of hiccups here to get it going again. We know that. And we know that folks are seeing prices as a result of it. We are laser focused on bringing those costs down.
President Biden visited the Port of Baltimore to highlight the latest action, spending some $243 million of the $17 billion for ports in the infrastructure bill. That, as supply chain woes and soaring consumer and producer prices are sparking voter anger, huge export losses, plus dock storage fees and further eroding bottom lines. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Ben Brown from FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute and University of Missouri Extension, now joins us to discuss the marketplace. I'm wondering, Ben, what it is that you've been thinking about demand for soybeans.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Todd. I really appreciate it. Always enjoy our monthly conversations. Yeah, let's talk about soybean demand. Part of the reason why we're focusing on this is we got the monthly National Oilseed Processors Association's report, plus export inspections and a couple other report and data coming out here this week. And so I want to start and focus there. So on the soybean crush report, so this is the October numbers. The trade was expecting a trade number that was around 182 million bushels for the month of October. What we ended up getting was a number that was 2 million bushels higher than that, so 184 million bushels. That corrects about 5 months of what I would call low soybean demand for soybean crush. Part of this is just due to the availability of soybeans. We really felt like once we got into harvest, given where we had seen some of the margins for soybean processors, that we'd see that number turn around, and we certainly did. That's the third all-time highest number for monthly soybean crush. Came behind last year's October number, just because last year's October number was an all-time record at so certainly we, you know, we see strong numbers there on the soybean crush, but probably a couple of things that stuck out as maybe being a concern going forward is soybean oil stocks came in almost 200 million pounds higher than what we saw a last month, certainly well above, a little over 100 million pounds above what the trade was expecting. That is a little bit of a concern just from the usage of soybean oil, and that's going to weigh on soybean oil prices as we move through the next trading session or two, and certainly it's down at the current moment. When we turn our attention to the soybean export picture through those weekly export inspections, I like to remind folks that these are, you know, estimated weekly export inspections. They're, you know, it'll be a little bit before we get the U.S. Census Bureau's official estimate, and we've seen revisions in the past. But when we look at the last week's export inspections, came in just under 2.1 million metric tons. That was down from 2.9 million metric tons the week before. So a very slow week on soybean export inspections. As a result, we actually saw, you know, our gap of what we need in terms of meeting USDA's export targets and where we're at right now actually grow on the week. And so that's a negative and a bearish factor there, just that we continue to see struggles on the soybean export picture. We started the year off extremely weak, and that continues as we head, you know, through this calendar year. And this is a point of the year where we really need to push those export inspections to catch up a little bit. As I remind folks, you know, USDA did cut their export inspections, or excuse me, their export target for U.S. soybeans in last week's World Agriculture and Supply Demand estimates by the tune of 40 million bushels. Of course, that was offset by, or that was greater, that was a bigger reduction on the demand side than what we saw in reduced supply for the current year. And so that was the bearish factor when we look at you know, demand. However, we continue to trade the positive news on reduced soybean supply. That caught many people off guard and sent the markets higher a couple of trading sessions last week. And we continue to trade that, but I put caution out there that, you know, there is some bearish demands news on the soybean complex, especially in the export market, but now even starting to appear a little bit in the soybean oil stocks as we head into the, you know, the third, fourth month of the marketing year here.
So. Well, I'd say I was glad to talk to you, but farmers probably weren't all glad to hear it, but I appreciate it.
No, and we've been talking about this for a little while, Todd, in terms of, you know, I have concerns about that soybean demand as we head through the marketing year. And I encourage producers to think about doing some marketing for those soybeans.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Ben Brown is with University of Missouri Extension, where he's an agricultural economist in the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. Joined us on this Monday afternoon. Mark Russo, by the way, from Everstream Analytics, is out of the office today. So I'll just bring you some of the weather forecast for portions of South America and the primary growing regions. Mato Grosso, Brazil, they call that the Middle West there, the largest soybean producing state in that nation. Looks like it'll be in the low 80s all week long, with a chance of rainfall from now all the way through Sunday of next week. Things do heat up there by the time we get to the weekend, with an 88 degree high on Saturday and a 90 degree high on Sunday. The lows all in the upper 60s to low 70s across Mato Grosso. Mato Grosso do Sul, which is further to the south there, an 88 degree top today. They'll have mid 80s through Wednesday, mid-70s to low-80s Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, all with some rainfall, the lows in that 70-degree mark all week long, and finally some sunshine in Mato Grosso do Sul on Sunday and Monday, with a high of 92 degrees next Monday in Mato Grosso do Sul. And finally in Tocantins, Brazil, that's the far northwestern corner of the nation. Rainfall all week from today all the way to next Monday, at least a chance of it. Mid-80s to begin the week, mostly the upper 80s by the middle of the end of the week, and they'll stay there with about a 70-degree low all week long. So should be growing conditions that are suitable for soybeans, with low rain each and every day in Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, and Tocantins, Brazil. On this Monday, let's check in with Greg Johnson at TGM here in Champaign. Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for being with us. Give me your lay of the land as it relates to the cash grain market for corn, please.
Farmers are tight holders of corn. for a couple of reasons. The higher input costs for next year have them concerned about whether they're going to be able to plant the normal amount of acres or not. This inflation talk has also got them being tight holders of corn. And the yields have been a little bit more variable on corn. Where it's good, it's really good. But where it was too wet and lost some nitrogen, the yields have dipped below 200. And so for all those reasons, the farmers have been very tight holders of corn. But they have been willing sellers of soybeans anytime the cash price gets a little bit above $12. So it seems like they're selling soybeans for cash flow purposes and holding on to corn until they have a better idea about next year's input costs.
The basis levels tell you that's the right choice?
Yes. Basis levels for corn are at 20 over at the processors. That historically is probably 5 over to option price. So they're 10 to 15 cents better than what we historically see on corn basis. And the bean basis is extremely firm too. Not as good as in past years, but still it's got a positive basis, a plus basis. So basis for both corn and beans are good, but you would expect corn basis to stay extremely firm for the foreseeable future until the farmers decide to start letting loose of some of it.
Is there a point before we get to the end of the year or soon after that that you can see things beginning to widen out some?
If we get to cash corn price up to $6, that seems to be the magic number. Right now we're in that 575 range. So if the board or the basis, that combination would improve 20 to 25 cents and we approach $6, that should free up, I would think would free up some farmer selling, but we haven't seen it yet.
Are the elevators full?
We've got some corn on the ground here, mainly to make room for soybeans. The soybean yields have been so good. I think the yields have been much better than expected on soybeans, whereas the corn it's definitely above average, but it's not a record crop because of the variability. So there is some corn on the ground in other places, I've heard as well, and I think that's probably a function of, you know, making room for soybeans and putting corn out on the ground. So there is some corn on the ground, but I don't think it'll stay out there very long. And with these extremely strong basis levels, I think it's mainly a function of getting trains in place and getting it loaded out because the demand is certainly there.
Have farmers taken to the idea that inflation will run through the 2022 growing season and not been making sales there on either crop too?
I think that's the secondary, yes. I think that's the secondary thinking, inflation. The primary thing is inflation as far as input costs are concerned. Will it be available, number one, and what will it cost, number two? Until they get those questions answered, I think they just feel like I'm going to be a holder, and I don't think prices will drop much. This is a farmer thinking that prices probably won't drop much in the interim, and so until I have a better idea on what my inputs are going to be, I'm just not going to get real aggressive on selling corn, and if I do want to sell something, I'll probably sell some beans.
Hey, thank you.
All right, thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM at their Champaign, Illinois facility. It was the Andersons facility right here in Champaign County. He joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.